Welcome into this week's edition of New Track Record Podcast. Caleb Hatch and Justin Kinney back with you for another week of IndyCar banter. Hello, Justin.
Hello, Caleb.
All right, well, let's get into it. As of tomorrow, Friday, February 19th, as we record this on Thursday the 18th, 100 days out from the Indy 500. Did you know that?
I didn't until you told me earlier today.
Oh, so I'd already spoiled it.
I already spoiled it, but it's not very long.
So tomorrow they're having the unveiling of Takuma Sato's second face on the BorgWarner Trophy at 1 o'clock Eastern in the afternoon. But while we're at it, let's talk Indy 500. We're basically 100 days out. Let's see where we're at. So as of right now, we have 28 confirmed car and driver combinations. You get to 30 with the Dale Coyne Racing with Rick Ware racing the 51 car for the 500. Whoever does the ovals there, then the 52 car, which will do the 500 and select other races. We have no clue there. We've mentioned names at length: James Davison, Pietro Fittipaldi, Cody Ware, who had a top 21 in the Daytona 500 last weekend.
Did he really?
Yeah.
That's so much I paid attention. Well, you know, if you run at the back long enough and stay out of the big ones, you can have a decent finish.
So we do know that Pietro Fittipaldi, one of the candidates, he is going to have an announcement at 11 o'clock Brasilia time, 2 p.m. UK time. What does that mean for those in the U.S.? It's 9 a.m. Eastern time. That'll happen Friday morning. So if you're listening to this in the morning, you'll probably already know the answer to this announcement. But he has an announcement coming. My guess is it has something to do with IndyCar.
I would say so. Do we feel like it's attached to a certain open seat?
Yeah, I would think it'd be the ovals car for Romain Grosjean.
Okay.
That's my guess. I don't know. Or maybe he's going to be an F1 test driver.
But yeah, who knows? I mean, he didn't embarrass himself last year.
No.
In Formula One.
He did not. So that would make 30. The other car, we assume... One, I'm going to say, is either Cody Ware or James Davison. The other is Pietro Fittipaldi. Would you agree? Do you expect any other names out there for those seats?
No, I think that's where we're at right now. Anything else would be a bit of a surprise.
All right, so that gets us to 30. And then now we get to the, will we find 33? I don't think that's the issue. It's more of, can we get 36 or 37? So you look at other entries from years past, and we would expect that Dryden Reinbold Racing would have two entries, Sage Karam, J.R. Hildebrand, right?
Yep.
And speaking of J.R. Hildebrand...
Hey, this is cool.
Yes. Supposedly, and I saw this on Auto Week, and then Hildebrand kind of answered something back on this because he couldn't really confirm or deny anything with it, but it was kind of along the lines of, we want this to happen, we hope this will happen, but I don't have anything further to say right now. But I said Auto Week. Road and Track reported a few days ago J.R. Hildebrand has signed up for the Pikes Peak International Hill Climb with an Indy car, and I saw that and I thought,
in the open wheel division, apparently there's different divisions in the open wheel division climbing Pikes Peak, which I've been down Pikes Peak.
Yeah, on a bike.
Most terrifying thing I've ever done. And now they're going to drive up it, apparently. So, you know, the question was with J.R. Hildebrand, you know, in terms of competitiveness with a car like that, you know, just how fast can you go up the mountain? And it sounded like he wasn't going to be tailored to the kind of handling and speed that you need, but who knows? Maybe it's going to be a highly modified Indy car. Who knows? I mean, I have so many questions about this. Is it a team sponsoring him? Somebody has to be. Somebody has a chassis, right?
Yeah. So it's apparently a 2021 Indy car, so it has an aero screen and everything. But he responded to Indy 44 on this, saying there's nothing more to say about it at this time due to a few remaining challenges that we knew would extend beyond the entry deadline, some not entirely straightforward. Rest assured, you'll know what we're up to at the appropriate point. And then he's got the emoji with the sunglasses on. So it sounds like this is still a work in progress, but they're efforting to make it happen.
going to be exciting. I would actually watch that for the first time ever.
Yeah, I'd love to check it out. I mean, and we know Pikes Peak from IndyCar because the Unsers used to dominate that
dominate
event.
The thing. Yeah,
they've won it. I don't know how many times between all of them, but
to be clear, this is not the raceway. This is the mountain.
Yes, yeah, not the closed raceway, which I have seen from an airplane before.
I've seen it driving by it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, but when it was open, when it was an actual race course.
It's been a while. It's been like 15 years, yeah, at least.
Yep.
Okay, so that's Hildebrand and Karam for Dryden Reinbold, we would assume. All right, then we get to Top Gun Racing, which was set to enter last year, but they needed fans in attendance for their sponsorship program to work. And we kind of thought about it, talked it out a little bit, and I think I sent you a tweet that I saw from David Land that he found on Facebook, which is always a purveyor of accurate information, right?
Yes, of course.
I'm like, back me up here. But David Land found these posts on Facebook from team owner Gary Trout. And I'm pulling up the photos here. There's a car being built. I think you'll like it. The two constants in the last year and a half has been the sponsor and driver, RC Enerson. And then the mock-up of the car, a picture from the post. And, well, it's got navy blue and yellow on it. Huh.
Hmm. You jumped to some conclusions that I think are fairly accurate.
Yeah. So obviously I think the sponsor is the U.S. Navy. And it was supposed to coincide with the release of Top Gun 2 last year. But obviously due to the pandemic and the movie getting pushed back, which it's supposed to come out. Is it in May?
I think so. Yeah, or June, maybe. May or June. I think it's June.
Yeah, it might be a little bit. It's July 3rd or 4th. Is it?
Oh, yeah. America, right?
America.
It's got to.
So with that.
July 12th. Well, 12th. Wait, it was originally scheduled for July 12th. Now it's July 2nd, 2021.
Okay. So that's the Friday of 4th of July weekend.
Yes. So looking at that car, it's painted similar to a Blue Angel, so the Blue, yes, Angels, which is the Navy, you know, stunt team, so pretty obvious with even the little that we see of the car that it is in the livery of a Blue Angels, and that makes sense with what we heard from Top Gun Racing with their involvement in the 500 last year, needing butts and seats and people on site for their sponsor. So with activation, has to make sense with the Navy want to be out there with recruiters and all that stuff to get some signatures from drunk people that don't know what they're signing.
Yeah, and you got to have some sort of like flight simulator thing that kids and adults alike can try.
Definitely. So it all makes sense in terms of what the sponsor would be and how they desperately need people there, because it makes no sense without activation on site.
All right, so you have Top Gun plus two from Dryden Reinbold plus the two from Rick Ware Racing / Dale Coyne Racing. Boom. We're at 33.
Done, right? That's all we have to worry about is getting to 33. Well, that's at least for a long time, that's how it was, right?
Yeah. Well, but we expect to have more. So this, yes, is where it gets a little tricky. I would say a third Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing. It could be that Citroen Buell partnership again. And I think that would also be contingent on, you know, number of fans in the stands for the race. Spencer Pigot, you would think, would be an option there. And I know that Robbie Buell had a quote, I think about a month ago or so on IndyCar.com, that they'd like to continue the program. It's just kind of a matter of, you know, what is allowed at that point. So a third car for Ray Hall, I would think that seems pretty possible, assuming they get sponsorship, right?
Yeah, I'd agree.
So there's 34. Carlin, which we have not mentioned, will at least have one car with Max Chilton, we would assume.
I would hope so, yes.
So there's 35. And then this is where, okay, do you have a sixth Andretti car? Like, say, Oliver Askew?
Yeah.
Or someone from Lights who gets a shot, who has the budget?
Potentially. I mean, do you feel like it's a... I don't think it's a Kyle Kirkwood and a one-off, right?
No, probably not. Because, I mean, he wouldn't even have experience on the oval.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But they did that before with Munoz his rookie year, but he at least had run the Freedom 100, you know, all of 2 days before.
True. Yeah, true. Very true.
So I could see, like, Askew as a sixth Andretti, possibly, or, you know, maybe a third Meyer Shank or some other random entry that we haven't even heard about, because that seems to happen every year.
Always does, right?
Last year it was Top Gun. This year it could be someone else. Well, this year I guess it could be Peretta, and that could be the entry that, you know, threw us off. And we had Simona on last week, so if you missed the interview, be sure to check that out.
Go back and check it out.
Any other teams or people that I'm missing here?
I don't think so. I mean, you mentioned it. We always just seem to have something come out of the woodwork, right? I mean, are we assuming too much because we have that in a normal year? And is this quote unquote a normal year? I'm not sure. But I think right now, if you were setting the betting line, would it be 36? 35 and a half? Would you go 36 and a half? I think I was
35 and a half.
35 and a half where you had set it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's fair. And man, that'd be tough. I don't know if I'd say 35, 36 is where we're at right now.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, the last couple of entries, it just depends if teams that already have a lot of entries, like Andretti with a sixth, if they're willing to expand or not. And I think that just comes down to someone that has been with the program before, have the budget. And I think Oliver Askew would be a fit for that. It's just a matter of if he can come up with the budget.
Yeah, just who can bring the cash, right? And I think that's where a lot of teams will be in their position, is who's bringing money.
All right, so now we get to the not-so-fun part.
Oh, what do we got?
Okay, so talk about entries. We expect there to be bumping, you know, 35, 36 cars, which is what we've kind of said for several months now, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's not really a change in what we've been thinking. I think I said 36 and you said 35.
Yeah, I think so.
So now we get to the part where we have just absolutely no clue, and that's the amount of fans. This could be anywhere from, what, 20% to 50%?
I think, yeah, I would think anything over 50% is not happening. I mean, we're seeing the numbers continue to go down in the state of Indiana, which is very good. But enough to have more than half the seats filled, I'm not sure we're going to get there. So, but I think even 50% of the fans in the seats would be better than nothing.
Well, and we know that they're probably not going to allow the infield, and definitely not going to have a snake pit.
No.
Those are out of the question, and the concerts probably won't happen by that point.
No, I mean, since from looks like December 8th of last year, where we maxed out at 5,400 new cases that day. Actually, December 7th, the day before, was at 5,600. Ooh, hold on. And then we're seeing, we had days over 8,000 cases per day, new cases. We're now down under 1,000 per day now in the state of Indiana. So going in the right direction, very much so, for sure. But, I mean, it's those vaccine numbers. I mean, you want to have opportunities sooner to go to any event you want to, including the Indianapolis 500. When you have the opportunity to get the vaccine, get it. Even if you have qualms about it, issues with it, blah, blah, get it, because every single vaccine means more possibility to open up the Indianapolis 500 and other events.
And the good news, the vaccination process, like, they're ahead of where they wanted to be right now. They're getting over 1.5 million, you know, per day, you know, barring the snowstorm and the mess that caused earlier this week. But that's across the country. So they're ahead of that goal that they set of, you know, 100 million in 100 days or whatever. But that's not going to be enough to get full capacity.
Not at all. So continue to get those shots. And look, you're going to feel like crap after that second shot. I guarantee it. Some people are worse than others, but I felt like crap for 24, 36, 48 hours, and it wasn't great. But, you know, it's a little issue that goes a long way into getting back to normal. So get the shot if you possibly can, so we can have some people at the 500 this year, and then hopefully 2022, it's all systems go.
All right, and the other news out of IMS this week is just packed full of IMS news. There's an article in Auto Week where Stefano Domenicali, who's the CEO of F1, had some quotes in it, and said that, well, they're looking at IMS. Not that this is a shock, but the quote is by Domenicali, the objective will be to increase the two American races. That is really the target in an interview in Auto Week. And then he went on to say, I cannot say today whether Vegas is better or worse, to be honest. We are working very hard on that. Indianapolis is in the equation. That is why it is good we have a lot of elements.
I still feel, and I told you, Caleb, that Indianapolis is the most viable option for Formula One for a second race in the States, right? And I think it's even close.
And then,
you know, when you look at Las Vegas 20 years ago, I think it was still a location that was still trying to put it itself on the map, that was still trying to bring in people. Now they have an NFL franchise, for crying out loud. They don't need a Formula One race. They're making millions and millions of dollars based on gambling, on everything that goes on there. They don't need a Formula One race to raise the cachet of the city. I think they're perfectly fine. So Vegas, I think 20 years ago was maybe that would be interested in doing that for the right price. I just don't think Formula One, for the amount of money they want to get for a race like that, Vegas is going to match, because they don't need it.
Well, and we've seen them try Miami and it's failed because people push back. New Jersey, which we all laughed at because we knew there was no chance that was ever going to work.
Come on, even just the politics in New Jersey and New York, like, there's no way.
Like, the course looked amazing. I mean, the views.
Well,
you know,
of course,
across...
yeah, I can draw a course for you right now. It looks amazing. Doesn't mean it's going to happen.
So those are kind of the earlier iterations that they were focusing on. I'm thinking, like, look, I get it. You want to come in and you want to have a race that has this amazing look on TV, but, you know, locally with local government, that's simply not going to work. Now, with F1's popularity in the U.S. increasing again, thanks to Drive to Survive, I mean, what better place than to have it at Indianapolis that, I mean, look, we're biased, but it's one of two FIA capable venues for Formula One in the U.S., the other, of course, being COTA, and you don't require a lot of work. Like, the course is pretty turnkey.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, you don't have to jump through all the hoops of a street course when you're looking at Jersey or Vegas or Miami or whatever. Logistically, it's so difficult. I have a hard time thinking we will ever is tough, but I think it's going to be a long time, if ever, that we see a Formula One street race in the United States ever again.
Yeah, it's been a while, and look, there was already smoke to this rumor because Jean Todt, who's the FIA president, was at the Indy 500 back last August.
That's right.
Touring the field, touring the grounds with
Roger
Penske.
He wasn't just there as a fan, we'll just say that, right? Especially with nobody there.
True. And like, yes, they invite guests to these things all the time that are officials in other series and power players. I mean, in a normal year, they'd have representatives from different automakers that aren't in the series because they're trying to woo them. But it's a business move. It's a business meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think Indianapolis is a viable option because, like you mentioned, the only, you know, one of only two FIA approved tracks in the United States. And I don't see municipal governments forking out the amount of money that Formula One wants to have a street course. You can pull that stuff off overseas with some of these countries and how they operate, but you're not going to do it in the United States. I mean, these cities that are bleeding money aren't going to throw tens of millions of dollars at Formula One for a race. And the ones that can't afford it don't need to do it. And we mentioned Vegas. Why would Vegas need to spend $20 million with a Formula One race? It already is the epicenter of tourism in the West.
Well, and Vegas has changed with, you know, first they got the NHL team, which was a huge deal. And then they got the NFL team,
which is
from Oakland, even
huge,
bigger deal.
Yeah.
And it's just like they don't need to draw on these events now when they have those teams already there.
I mean, that's why, you know, when IndyCar had the street race there, right? It was a kart that did it.
I think there are different versions. So Champ Car had a race there. Kart, I think, had a race there. F1 had races there.
Yeah. But that was in the formulative years of Vegas, where it was just starting to be Vegas as we know it now. And those things drew people in, right? That brought people that otherwise may not consider Vegas in. But now, like you mentioned, NHL franchise, NFL franchise, it's blowing up. You know, Vegas, even from 15, 20, 25 years ago, is completely different. They don't need a Formula One. They don't need the glitz and glamour of Formula One because they already have the glitz and glamour. Right? I mean, just go down the strip. They don't need a Formula One race to do that. Miami municipality, there's no way that happens. There's just two. And then, you know, up in Northeast is just laughable. New Jersey, New York, there's absolutely no way. So I think you're going to have to look at the permanent facilities in the United States if Formula One is to expand. And so you look at COTA, obviously, and I think you look at Indianapolis. And quite frankly, I think within, what would you say, not 2022, maybe still be quick, but I'd say 2023.
Yeah. Well, Adam Stern, Sports Business Journal, saying the earliest the race would happen is 2022 per source. Well, I can see it happening that early, but I think 2023 is probably more realistic.
Yeah, I think so. I still feel like this year is going to be a bit difficult for IMS and IndyCar and Roger Penske as a whole. I think, you know, 2023, because that's a lot of money to fork over. That's eight figures to fork over for Formula One. And I'm not sure if Roger would want to do it the first, quote unquote, full year back to racing. I think 2022, he's really going to want to knock the Indy 500 out of the park. And then 2023, come back and say, okay, now we're ready for Formula One. That would be my opinion, but could be wrong, probably wrong.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that. If they can't have a full, you know, full fans for the Indy 500 this year, I mean, they're going to have to recover from that for a second straight year.
I mean, or you're Roger Penske and you're bullish and you're saying, okay, 2022's it, 100% in, here we go, full 500, F1 back, IMSA endurance race, just everything on the table.
Yeah, pack the calendar with events, knowing that if you build it, people will come, so to speak. So, yeah, you have all those big events and make it a destination and hope that by then everyone will feel safe, hopefully, going places, but more so that people will be willing to go back to places and return to that. Because when you're removed from something for too long, people forget about you.
Yes. Even 2022 could be that. I just, you know, man, it'd be a tough turnaround. And I feel like while Roger Penske has put a significant amount of money into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, there are upgrades that he would want/have to do when Formula One returns.
Oh yeah, there are always upgrades that Formula One would want. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Did you ever go when F1 was here previously?
I did not, no.
Okay. I went in 2006 and 2007, so I did not go in 2005.
Okay, well, that's good.
So that's the good news. The cars back then were just incredible beasts.
Yeah.
And they had big names. I mean, Schumacher and Montoya and Kimi Raikkonen, you know, Alonso.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, still would have been the V12 era.
Yeah, I think so. The big V12.
Ferrari, BMW, Mercedes, Renault. I'm sure I'm missing another key manufacturer. But the cars back then were just incredible beasts. And if F1 gets their new cars to be anywhere close to what those were, that would be a good start. Because, I mean, the car, obviously, right now needs to be changed. It's not working long term.
No.
Because, well, there's zero parity.
Nope. So is the new engine formula 2023?
I believe so.
Okay.
Or no. I think something changes in 22. And that might be, yeah. I think this next year is the last year of the current formula. Something changes for 22, though.
Gotcha.
I'm not 100%. But, yeah, the cars back then at IMS, and that was the end. And, like, you knew it was leaving. Going in 2006 and 2007, but it was just, as a high school kid seeing those cars, it was incredible to see what they were capable of. And that's something that you have to experience in person, just like the Indy 500, to see an F1 car in person. And people would probably like, stop talking so much F1. Dirt, dirt, dirt.
Dirt, dirt, dirt.
But you know, this helps the speedway.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
It helps the bottom line for Penske, for IndyCar, for IMS, and so on.
Yeah, right. That's the big thing, right? Because, you know, people will complain about NASCAR talk too. Is look, NASCAR in its current iteration pays these tracks make a lot of money hosting NASCAR, and let's just say, without a fat check from NASCAR, where is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway over the last 7-8 years? Where's the IndyCar series over the last 7-9 years? So everybody kind of perversely pointing to NASCAR and saying, just wait till that TV deal's up because you're going to get a dose of reality. So are a lot of these tracks, including the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So I, for one, would love to see NASCAR get big money in their next TV contract because that helps tracks. And some of them that it can afford to have a loss or a minor gain to host IndyCar because they have a huge 8-figure check coming from NASCAR. So, you know, everything, the bottom line is what matters. I know a lot of people are IndyCar people or Formula One people or NASCAR people. The bottom line matters at these tracks. And the bottom line is tremendously helped by that gigantic check every year from NASCAR.
All right, and we'll have more on NASCAR a little later on.
Yeah, buddy.
Because there are some tie-ins to IndyCar, of course, and some questions. But, you know, if you have suggestions, comments, you know, picks for Indy 500 rides or thoughts on F1 to IMS, we'd love to hear your opinions. You can reach us on social media. Like us on Facebook. It's New Track Record. Follow us on Twitter. The handle is IndyCar Podcast. You can also email us, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. And you can find us at newtrackrecordpodcast.com. While you're there, subscribe to our weekly emails. That way you will not miss an episode. And you can find us on many different podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts. And if you subscribe on there, do us a favor, give us a 5-star rating. And if you're really nice, write a review. You can also find us on Spotify, Overcast, CastBox, Player FM, iHeart, Podchaser, TuneIn, 1380thefan.com, and episodes posted every weekend on WOWO.com. Okay, time for the mailbag.
Crickets.
We have a few things.
All right, that's good.
We have a few things. So first one I want to get to from our buddy Jamin from Facebook, and I got to pull this up here. So
yeah, Jamin's always hitting us up on the Facebook.
And with some good questions.
He's typing. So it wasn't a lot of stuff. Usually we get helped, Caleb, by the Wednesday, Thursday news drop. But we weren't helped this week. We were waiting for something to drop, and nothing ever big did.
So. Yeah, what Wednesday, Thursday news
drop?
Yeah,
we were let down by IndyCar this week.
All right, so from our friend Jamin, F1 running on the new layout at Indianapolis, yes, please. If they go back to the old blah layout, then no. My number one is and will be IndyCar, but I have to admit, I would love to see F1 cars scream through the turns 5-6 chicane, hit Holman Boulevard into turn 7, attended one U.S. Grand Prix and enjoy the overall experience more than the race. It was amazing, the many nations represented in the stands and the number of exotic car brands driving around Speedway that weekend. Hopefully they bring the W Series and the F3, F4 U.S. Series with them. Yes, agreement on all of the above.
Yeah, all the above. I would love it. As somebody that's just recently got into Formula One the last couple of years, I'd love. And, you know, knowing somebody at work that got into Formula One through Drive to Survive and telling him that there's a possibility that that Formula One returns to Indianapolis, he's excited. So be really cool. We'll see if it happens. I think it does.
I think it does, and I think it happens, you know, within the next 2 years. I think it's going to be quicker than a lot of people expect, just like an IMSA race. I think that happens pretty quickly as well.
And I feel like, you know, if you're Formula One and you're still itching to get that second U.S. race, and you look at all the hoops you're going to have to jump through for Vegas or all the hoops you're trying to jump through for Miami, and yeah, they're glitz and glamoury and probably more sexy than the smack dab in the middle of Indiana in the Midwest, but you're going to take the path of least resistance, right? If you have less that you need to worry about to get a race at Indy as opposed to elsewhere, and you want to rush this thing and get a second race as soon as possible, then I think it makes a heck of a lot of sense for the return of IMS to the Formula One schedule.
Well, and Indianapolis has changed a lot since F1 was last there. I mean,
yeah, look at downtown Speedway.
Downtown Speedway has changed a lot. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to do there. Indianapolis as a city has a lot more of a food scene, has a lot more of the arts. The Conrad Hotel, which it may have been open at the tail end of F1, but not for very long. I mean, you have a really, really nice hotel. There are boutique hotels now.
Yeah, stuff way out of our intelligence level. Like, yeah. Yeah, we're not allowed in these places, but
that is
other
true.
People are.
True, and that would cater to the F1 crowd more.
Yeah.
Look, I get it's still Indianapolis compared to, you know, Monaco, but
yeah.
Indianapolis has a lot more to offer now than it did 15 years ago, and whereas before, people would stay in Chicago and then just, like, come in for race day. And
yeah,
I don't think that'll be as much of the case now.
It's a great point. I mean, the immediate area around the Speedway is still pretty dumpy. I mean, you still have to go a block or two to get to Speedway. I get that. But you're exactly right. I mean, in terms of the downtown proper of Indianapolis, it's come a long way.
All right. This question via email, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com from Craig. I'm concerned that money, not skill, is preventing many good drivers from getting opportunities in IndyCar. I'm wondering if IndyCar needs some sort of promotion / regulation of drivers. Years ago, we had the travesty Dan Weldon not getting a ride. Could it work that the top 5 or 10 series drivers get auto entries, lower fees, something to keep them employed? The top 2 Indy Lights get a sponsorship to make them attractive to teams. Also allow drivers to stay in Indy Lights until they are no longer employable. Love to see drivers that fell off the carousel and are without an IndyCar ride be available for Indy Lights, maybe work their way back to the series. I think the series has a propensity to have drivers that are able to stick around because they bring money but aren't competitive. The IndyCar Championship Series doesn't incentivize teams or drivers to work to compete in every race or teams to field multiple drivers. Well, that would be possible for Lights, and Zach Veach did it, but he only did like a handful of IndyCar races before going back down and then winning some races, then moving up full time. But it's just like the money is better spent in IndyCar. That's the problem.
I mean, it's the age old question at every level of racing, right? I mean, money opens doors in racing. I mean, a lot of these, you know, go all the way down to karts. I mean, when you look at these teams and these kids that pull up, most of their parents are pretty well off or can afford these things. I mean, it's just disposable income for a lot of these kids. Yeah, there's some stories there where mom and dad invested their retirement into, you know, little Bobby's, you know, run at Glory and stuff like that. And we always hear the success stories of those, but we never hear the failings, right? We never hear the story
true.
That mom and dad, you know, really backed Matt's career and he never went anywhere and they lost their retirement, right? So, look, it's always been a wealthy man's sport. I wouldn't say always been, because it's not always been like that. I understand. But now it is kind of trends towards those upper class people that can afford to back their kids, or middle class at least, right? So there's limited opportunities for kids coming from low income families into this thing. And, you know, we're seeing some, you know, push toward incentivizing, like, the message said, about giving kids opportunities that otherwise wouldn't, or giving drivers rides that otherwise wouldn't in IndyCar. But it's always going to come back on money, especially in a sport that at this time, not a lot of the teams are, you know, rolling in cash. They need drivers to bring cash. I think if you saw an uptick in IndyCar's popularity and sponsorships and eyes on product, I think you could see some of these teams take more chances on a driver that maybe wouldn't otherwise be in a seat because he doesn't bring money. So the overall health of the series, the economy of the series, I think somewhat holds it back in that regard.
Yeah, I fully agree. And look, it's not like the 90s where X tobacco company or, you know, cell phone provider buys the whole ride and then it's just they hire on talent. That's not how it works anymore. And it's unfortunate because we all wish it could be that way. And it is that way for the top teams, but they can just pick and choose who they want. But back then, it was everyone pretty much had it that way, you know, outside of, you know, a few small teams. But even Dale Coyne found a way to make it work back then. And we don't have, you know, cigarette companies pouring money in, or, you know, the beer companies, or there is some technology, you know, companies. They've kind of replaced some of the ones that were there before, but it's just not the same. But they found ways to make it work. And look, is IndyCar in a better place than 5 years ago? Absolutely.
I think if we went up and down the paddock and talked to each team owner, they would all of them have at least one or two stories about the kids they wish they could have given a shot to, but financially they just couldn't. And so I believe that the teams and owners would love to be in a situation where they could groom a kid or give it a second chance to somebody. But it comes down to the bottom line for a lot of these teams. And you know what? I think, you know, off the cuff, get a couple beers in some of these team owners, they say, yeah, we didn't want to take the check from that kid and put him in the car and run him for an entire season. We much rather would have went and hired this guy or that person, you know? So unfortunately, that's business. And sometimes to stay afloat, to stay on the grid, you have to put somebody in a seat you otherwise wouldn't.
Well, yeah, and to them, it's like, we had to take the check because I wanted to keep the race team. I had to employ my employees.
Yeah,
I had to give them a paycheck.
It's either put somebody in the seat you're not entirely confident in or have nobody in the seat for a car that doesn't exist.
All right, this from Vicky Lynn 26. This is for you, Justin. Hearing how Justin went down the rabbit hole, did he happen to watch any of the Vancouver races? I was born in California, lived in Long Beach, but moved to Vancouver when I was 8. IndyCar came to town. I was 15, and it's been my passion ever since. I miss having IndyCar here. Did you watch?
Yeah, I think Vancouver 2000 was on.
Okay,
I want to say and delved in there. Look, when you're laying in your son's bed when he, you know, wants you to lay down because you've been gone all day, which is one of these days. Thursdays is usually that one of those days where I get home at 9:30, right when he's going to sleep, and I'll lay down with him, and you know, you start fumbling through Facebook, and Facebook's so smart that if you hit one thing, then it starts saying, okay, you want to watch all this stuff. So that is indeed the rabbit hole I went down. Watch some Vancouver as well, another place that I wish IndyCar would get back to. Beautiful part of North America and Canada in particular. Picturesque views. We were close with Portland, right? You know, but
yeah,
it'd be cool. You know, we wanted to get back in the Northwest. We're close with Portland and in the Northwest of the United States. Vancouver's sitting there. Hopefully we can get back there.
Vancouver is one of the favorite cities I have ever visited.
I have never been to Vancouver, but everybody I've ever talked to that's went there, rave reviews.
It is. I don't know. I thought it was real. It's very modern and it's very outdoorsy. So that's cool. There are a lot of activities, you know, and you can take the train or whatever places. And of course it's coastal, so there's activities with that. And it's close to ski resorts, which I enjoy that.
Yes,
so
you love this.
It checks a lot of boxes.
Absolutely.
All right, and you had this great tweet, and there's a response to it we'll get to in a second, but this on Daytona. Imagine the top four rows of the Indy 500 crashing on lap 15 to 200. It's basically what happened at Daytona today. Woof.
Yeah, we debated this, too, because if you didn't watch Daytona, was it lap 14?
Yes.
The big one happened. I think it was second and third at the time, got into it and pretty much took everybody out behind him. So the equivalent was lap 14 of the Indy 500. The whole first four rows are just out. And that's basically what it was.
We've had that at races like Gateway last year.
Yeah.
One of the races that was
true.
Just embarrassing.
But, you know, it was just, you know, the biggest race of the year in your sport, Daytona 500 for NASCAR. And, you know, immediately the majority of your contenders, the fastest cars of the week, we're out. And granted, they didn't have much practice time and stuff with a lot of rain down there. But, you know, it kind of took a little bit out of the event. And then, of course, the rain moved in after. And I threw this proposal out to you, and I could hear the audible scoff over text message when I said, and part of this is related to Derek Cope, because Derek Cope blew a cylinder or something happened on like lap three or four. He's 62 years old. He hadn't raced in Cup in like 16 years, something like that. He was out. I remember watching Derek Cope at an old Michigan race, was down like two cylinders and just coming around going like two-thirds of the speed everybody else was. So I had a soft spot for Derek Cope after that. But I proposed to you to not start the race back up until Monday and reset it and start the race over, because you had taken out, I know people are saying that's racing, and you said that's racing. It had taken out a fair amount of contenders, two of which I had put money on, so maybe that's why I'm pushing this theory. But you know, lucky dogs aren't racing. Stages aren't racing. green white checkers aren't racing, so why
Firestone
stop there?
Red tires technically aren't racing.
Push to pass is not racing, so this is not just a NASCAR thing. But I'm saying, for the product, for your biggest race of the year, why not just hit the reset button? Come back fresh Monday. Sunday didn't happen. Starting lap one.
Well, F1 restarted a race last year where they like reset everything and kind of screwed people with, you know, they let everyone get work done in the pits during the red flag.
Yeah, that's
true. That was in the rules. I mean, it drove me nuts, but that was in the rules.
Yeah, I mean, is it the best situation? No, but for your race, like let's say it's lap 14 of the Indianapolis 500 and all your major contenders are out, or the majority of it, would you be against resetting the race?
I would be, but
I know you would be. Me, I'm for the show, for the viewers. If we're in a race where Fernando Alonso is caught up in an early wreck and he's out, or Kyle Busch, or whoever, and then it's a bunch of rain and they're not sure if they're going to start, I would hit the reset button. I would put Alonso back in the race. I would put Kyle Busch back in the race. Maybe that's, I mean, I'm there for the show, because how many eyes do you lose? And we saw just how many eyes NASCAR lost restarting that Daytona race at, what, 9:15 Sunday night?
Yeah, that
finishing
that
after midnight
did not work out well, and we'll get to that in a second because there's another tweet someone responded. This from Chucky WX in response to the crash. The only time IndyCar was worse was that 96 US 500, and that was split stuff. And you know, the so-called greatest drivers in the kart race were the ones with the embarrassing start. Just want to point that out.
Yeah, very, very
not
good
that
point,
I took a side during the split because I was way too young to care. But I just find it ironic.
If you were playing a drinking game for IndyCar fans over 40 years old, and you had to take a shot every time somebody mentioned the split,
you'd be dead.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, how long do we have to get away from the split before it's no longer a talking point? Okay, we understand that it ruined open wheel racing. I get it, but it's just kind of that we reached a point where it's like, okay, it happened. It's a long time ago. Let's move on.
Well, it's been 25 years.
I mean, yeah, but it's still it's still talked about like it was 3 weeks ago. Like, oh, the split killed it. I understand. You know, we're almost reaching a point where it's ancient history, right? So let's just move past it. I understand what happened. I understand it was the death knell of open wheel racing as we know it in the United States. But let's move on.
Well, I think it's an off-season topic because people just get bored and want something to talk IndyCar, and it's just the easy,
thing
to bring up.
Yeah, we were guilty of it a couple of weeks ago when we brought, you know, the 10 years comparing, you know, the fields, and that was part of the split, right? But it's just, you know, man, we got to look ahead. We got to look forward. And so, you know, it happened. It is what it is. But, man, it's approaching 30 years since the damn thing.
This from Arkel, and we have a few tweets from him. The first one that's relatable, as far as the... Oh, well, let me get to Poet Shevchenko, because this is the original question. What are the chances the Indy 500 becomes the most watched race of 2021?
Huh.
I think that's a great question, and I think the answer is very high.
Really? You think it will draw more than... Well, I mean, what's the fine, quote-unquote final rating for Daytona? I mean, what are we comparing it to?
So, Daytona in 2021, a 2.8 rating, 4.83 million viewers. So, you compare that to last year's Indy 500, which was slightly lower than that. I'm pulling up here shortly, 2.26, 3.669 million viewers.
So 2.26 to a 2.8?
Yeah.
I think that's a tremendous jump for IndyCar if it happens with the 500. But then again, what was it in 2019?
Yeah, so that's where it changes. 2019, it was a 3.4. And why do I remember this? Because we made that bet that I lost.
And that was the lowest ever.
No, right? No, it was not.
Well, prior to before last year.
The Indy 500 earned a 3.4, 5.41 million viewers. That's on a normal year. It was up from a 3.1, 4.91, which I believe was the lowest.
I think if the IndyCar or the Indy 500 goes off without a hitch, ran on Memorial Day weekend, everything's quote unquote normal with the schedule, yes, I think it gets above a 3.
Yeah, I think it gets a 3.5 or above.
Now,
if it's run on the date and time that it, you know, normally runs.
What? So what's the question? Auto race or just race?
Most watched race of 2021.
Does that include the Kentucky Derby is what I'm asking.
Oh, I think they mean auto race.
Okay.
That's what I would assume. And then Arcole responded pretty high as long as it's on Memorial Day weekend and doesn't rain. Daytona 500 was the least viewed in that race's history. And that is correct.
But we have to, you know, asterisk that they were screwed because of the rain.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, they could have started the race at noon.
Which they are considering.
I saw that because the campaign that I've seen on social media to change it, and then they actually said it in quotes, like, maybe we should consider starting it at noon.
I mean,
maybe.
That's been obvious for years.
The West Coast viewers simply aren't there because NASCAR is regionally a Midwest and Southeast sport.
Yes, absolutely. So catering to this overestimated West Coast viewer vibe that they have is silly.
If there was a time that the West Coast viewer would have come in the clutch for them, it would have been Sunday night.
Right, and it didn't deliver, right?
No, not at all.
So, I absolutely feel that that race should be run at noon, start at noon.
This also from R. Cole, and it's so this is a reply to the picture of Romain Grosjean saying hello to Dale Coyne Racing. There's a Ford Champ car behind him. And he said, for one brief glorious second, I thought Ford was coming back to American open wheel racing. Yes, agreed. I was confused by the picture too. I'm like, oh, it's just a Champ car.
Aw, darn. Why did he have a Champ car in there?
It's just in the Dale Coyne Racing shop. You know, they have cars, you know, on display. It's
okay.
One of those.
I thought it was like on the hauler or something.
No. Also, Grosjean just did his seat fit. He tweeted that out not too long ago before we started. So
nice.
He did a test, that's to come. I think that's next week, the 22nd.
Gotcha.
But Arcole also sent us this as a trivia question. I don't know the answer, so we're going to have to guess.
Okay.
Since 2000, only 14 different drivers have won the CART IRL IndyCar Championship. That's 21 years and 29 seasons. Can you name the drivers? So 14 different drivers have won championship since 2000. Assuming we're including 2000.
Okay.
All right. So let's start with the easy ones.
I'm going to say Scott Dixon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bourdais.
I'm out. No, I'm just kidding. All right.
Hornish. Lazier.
Uh-huh. How many are there?
14. We have four.
Okay. So Lazier, Hornish. Yeah.
Dixon and Bourdais.
Dixon, Bourdais.
Kanaan, Hunter Ray, Weldon, Franchitti.
Power,
thank you. Pagenaud, Newgarden, that's 11.
Since 2000?
Yeah.
I think the other three have to be CART guys.
Gilles Deferrin?
I would say Gilles.
Did Cristiano D'Amata ever win a CART title? I don't think he did, but he's close, right? Oh, Paul Tracy. He won one in 2003.
Yeah.
That's 13. So who would be the last one?
I don't know
one?
A lot of CART, so I think we got all
Montoya. Didn't he win CART in 2000?
Yeah, I think so. So I think we got all the IndyCar guys. But
so
we
that's 14. So we're covered, I think. Now I'm going to look up some of these CART guys, you know, see if we got it correct.
Zanardi didn't win them.
No, not then.
It's too late.
So Gilles Deferrin won in 2000.
I think you're right with D'Amata.
2001 was also Gilles Deferrin. I thought he won back to back. 2002, was D'Amata. So we missed D'Amata. 2003 was Paul Tracy.
And then
it's Bourdais the next whatever. So we were close.
I thought we did pretty darn good, actually.
Yeah. I agree, unless we missed, you know, another IndyCar one that we didn't think of.
No, I think we got all the IndyCar ones.
All right, well, that wraps up the mailbag. And again, you can always tweet us, IndyCar Podcast, Facebook message us, just like New Track Record, or send us an email, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. All right, time for news and notes. And Justin, it's one of our favorite topics, and I just saw this come in from Motorsport.
Oh, God.
David Malsher Lopez. This is one of our favorite topics. Headline, Schmidt, Aaron McLaren SP ready to complete IndyCar Big Four. But there is a bit of news in this.
Okay.
With Juan Pablo Montoya, who was a kart champion, I guess, in 99 and not 2000.
Yes.
But with Montoya in this, they actually are trying to get him some more races. In fact, they'd hoped to add him for the IndyCar Grand Prix on the road course. Sam Schmidt saying, we're trying to put together funds to run Juan Pablo at the Indy Grand Prix to give him and us a bit of momentum. Helps get the extra pit crew some real-time experience in a race day environment. It gets Juan in tune with his engineer, who's Craig Hampson Sooner. Actually, just supplies us with more feedback for the road course, too. So they're hopeful of that. So potentially adding another race with Montoya, I think that makes sense. And then it's very complimentary of Felix Rosenquist. They're adding to the team. Thoughts on them being a part of the Big Four? I thought they were basically right there last year, right?
I mean, it comes back to you got to prove it before you get crowned.
Got to win a race.
That would go a long way towards putting yourself
as McLaren with the branding. They won races with Hinch, you know, when they were just SPM.
Yeah, but I mean, you had a guy finish fourth in the championship, and that's it in terms of guys coming back. So you got to prove it on track, right? I mean.
Yeah, I would agree.
Like you said, let's win a race before we consider ourselves in the conversation of the big three, then big four. But I'd welcome it. It'd be fine with me, but you got to prove it on track first.
All right, some other driver news. James Hinchcliffe will have primary sponsorship from Capstone Turbine. I've never known. I thought it was Turbine, but I've heard Turbine.
I like Turbine. I feel like it makes me sound a little bit more refined, and I need all the help I can get.
That's fair. We knew this, but primary sponsorship for 6 races, 10 with Genesis, 1 to be determined. This from Nathan Brown of the Indy Star. Also, George Steinbrenner IV returns for co-ownership for that team. So that's good
nice.
News.
Yeah, that's good news.
Good to see him back in IndyCar. Sure. Graham Rahal announcing that his Rahal Ducati Indianapolis dealership is set to open its doors. In fact, they opened February 17th, so they are open. So if you are a Ducati fan, that's it's like the Ferrari of motorcycles, for those of you unaware.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mentioned that Romain Grosjean had a seat fit in the Dale Coyne Racing shop, and he tweeted earlier this week about, you know, arriving in Chicago, and he's, you know, listing stuff out in Celsius, so I don't understand, but it is very cold. That part was clear.
You mean you cannot convert in your head?
No.
Celsius to Fahrenheit?
I cannot.
What about Kelvin?
No.
Okay.
2 degrees Kelvin. Jenna Fryer tweeting, Connor Daly will be racing in the NASCAR Truck Series for Nice Motorsports at Las Vegas. He did that last year. No surprise. Oh, I forgot to mention this when we were talking about Aaron McLaren SP. They tweeted out the other day, mark your calendar, February 26th. I'm guessing that's the livery reveal.
One of these years, I hope that they go with the testing livery that's on it, and that's just somebody's livery because it's kind of cool.
It does look cool.
Yeah,
I tried watching McLaren's F1 launch, and it was just constant interviews. And then they revealed the car, and it was basically the same looking car as the previous year. It was a major letdown. But those things happen.
They do. These are unprecedented at times.
Oh, you beat me to it.
Snuck it in.
Good job. Andretti Autosport, they're going to be in like a million series. They're now in seven. They're now in Super Copa, which is in Mexico, partnering with Michelle Jourdain Jr. Andretti Jourdain Autosport, they will be in Super Copa Mexico Championship. I don't know much about the series, but Nathan Brown with an interesting quote here. Michael Andretti said he hopes entering Super Copa will help IndyCar have a shot to return. I think it's very important to try and get back into Mexico. With Pato being from there, being competitive should help. Us being there in a very popular series won't hurt either. And also Trackside Online pointing this out. With that, it'll be the 7th different series for Andretti.
That is a lot of stuff to be involved in.
And there could be more because they're looking at an IMSA program.
Oh.
This, according to Racers Marshall Pruitt, targeting an IMSA LMDH program. And I will admit, I have not read this article because I am not well-versed in sports car racing, as you are not either.
No.
But they're looking at the 2023 LMDH formula, and that's the thing that could be in the 24 Hours of Le Mans, I believe. Correct me if
I'm
wrong.
I think so, too. I think that I know enough to know that.
And they've been in sports cars before, so they've had Acura support and ALMS from 2007 to 2008. This is not like a shock, and I think it makes sense. You want to keep expanding, and I don't think they're going to go the F1 route unless everything else is super successful on the other. That's kind of the last thing to check off.
Do you think eventually they will become a Formula One team?
You know, F1 would have to change to be friendlier to American teams and let them either A, be based in America, or just not have this anti-American sentiment, it seems. And that's in the paddock. I'm not talking about the drivers necessarily. Right. I'm talking about the leadership in the sport. And with Liberty Media, I think that's changing. But it has to continue to change.
I just feel like that's like such a jump from everything else. Like, just because you are in everything else in every other form of motorsport doesn't mean you're ready for Formula One or can handle Formula One. I just feel like maybe, I just don't know, in the portfolio of Michael Andretti's wants and bucket list is to have a Formula One team.
But I think with the new formula and the cost caps, it would be a lot more attractive.
I would agree there. I mean, definitely right now, Formula One is not very sexy, right? But even with the new measures, I mean, will it eventually just revert back to what it is now? I mean, will the cream rise to the top and the teams that don't spend hundreds of millions of dollars just sink?
And that's what always happens.
Right? I feel like that's going to happen. Eventually, Mercedes is going to find a way to circumvent the new rules to come up with something, or Red Bull's going to do it or something. I feel like you can only hold these teams back for so long before they find a loophole.
Which is, to be fair, what Penske did in the kart days.
I mean, it's what racing is. You have to do everything to find an advantage. And, you know, maybe the cost cap helps, because you just can't price out the competition. You can't outspend them. But I feel like, two, the better teams are going to find a way. I think your best case scenario for Formula One is IndyCar in terms of competitive balance. But you're still shocked when a small team wins a race. They'll actually have a chance, though. But I still think your top teams will still be Mercedes and Red Bull and whoever else spends, Ferrari.
Maybe throw McLaren. It seems like they're on the up and up for now.
True, but you know what's their apex? I mean, can they continue to rise in the manufacturer's points, and they're not really spending as much as the top three? I mean, they basically had to sell their building to subsidize their Formula One program. That was the story, at least.
It worked.
Well, I know, but like, they had to do that to get fourth in the manufacturers' championship.
No, they got third.
Third. So, but what are they going to have to do to get to Red Bull and Mercedes?
Well, they're going to have Mercedes engines this year.
That helps.
It helps a little, but that didn't really help Racing Point, you know, now Aston Martin. I mean, it helped them.
It helped
speed,
them not,
but
yeah.
It didn't. They didn't, you know, win tons of races. I mean, Perez won a race, and that was it, right?
Right. You know, look, just because you have Mercedes engines doesn't mean you're going to be Mercedes. And Mercedes will make sure of that.
But they're at least have gone from being a complete joke, to be honest, in 2017 and 18 to 2019. They were, you know, midfield, had some promise. And last year, I mean, they were one of the top teams. Now, the gap between them and Red Bull is
quite significant.
Huge, but it's something.
Well, and you know, who would have thought that Ferrari would have been in the position that it was, and doesn't look like a short-term answer is there.
No.
But you know, Racing Point being able to be where it was huge last year. But yeah, I just think the difference between what was the top three and now the top two, at least for now, is just that's a cliff. I mean, they were. I'm looking at the standings right now. McLaren had 202 points, so they were. Let's see. They're closer to eighth than they are second, based on last year's championship points.
Well, in IndyCar, the gap between Penske and Ganassi and everyone else has actually been pretty big.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, people, we've had that debate here. Like, just how competitive is IndyCar really? I mean, it's the most competitive around, but I don't watch enough NASCAR to tell you that IndyCar is more competitive than NASCAR.
I mean, NASCAR is Hendrick, Gibbs, and maybe Roush Fenway, right? And that's pretty much
Yeah,
it.
I mean, I don't know. But then you look at IndyCar, and it's Penske, Ganassi, Andretti, and then there's a handful of races that everybody kind of splits up. There's maybe three or four races that go somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm just, you know, that's a rabbit hole we can go down when we're trying to kill time on another show without a lot of news. But I really kind of raise my eyebrow when people say how competitive IndyCar is, when I'm like, yeah, and we say it here, we do, but in terms of wins, really, how competitive is it? It's better than Formula One, but pretty much everything is, right?
Oh, yeah. Competitive level, yes.
Yeah.
Well, except, you know, you go into other sports and it's different. Meyer-Shank Racing, so we mentioned last week that Elia would run in the Music City GP. And it will be with a new sponsor, TransCard LLC. They provide cloud-based payment solutions to financial institutions and corporations throughout the U.S., and they're based in Chattanooga. So that makes sense, having a sponsor based in the state of the race. So good for them. And in fact, speaking of the Music City GP, I got an email today with a pre-sale code.
Ooh.
And so you can buy tickets now if you have that. Otherwise, three-day tickets go on sale on Tuesday, February 23rd, 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern on Ticketmaster. So that is coming up.
And we will be on pit lane for that, right?
Yeah, I wish. We'll see. All right, a couple of things to get to before we get to Tweets of the Week and wrap it up. First off, fun fact, I think I texted you this, but Michael McDowell won the Daytona 500, won what was essentially back then the Indy Pro 2000 championship in 2004. He replaced Ryan Hunter-Reay at Rocket Sports in, 2005, I think?
Okay.
And, of course, won the Daytona 500 on Sunday. So that's wild, and it was a good day for you.
Yes, made me some cash money. $2 bet, which I was upset that I didn't put more on it after the fact. Buddy of mine, on my suggestion, put money on Michael McDowell and made me $134, which I didn't know until I wake up shortly after the race was over. I fell asleep about 40 to go to text from you because I had told you that I put money on Michael McDowell, and the buddy that I told to put money on that he put $5 on, won over $400.
Dang.
That it was big time. Congratulations to me. So I won. Could have won more, but beggars can't be choosers. Thank you to Mr. McDowell for avoiding that wreck. Well, all the wrecks, but particularly that last one. Coming home victory bought me some cash.
Now you're going to sponsor an IndyCar team, right?
Yes. Next plan. Well, I mean, we've always, that's our goal in May, is when we're walking down pit lane, you know, pre-race, we're going to slap one of our stickers on one of those cars. I mean, if we get arrested, that's the small price to pay to get new track record on the grid.
That's right. Graham Rahal will be in the United Rentals, and it's like a throwback livery because it's 30 years of Rahal's team.
Nice.
And it'll look like, kind of based off the Miller Lite car that Bob had.
Oh, sweet.
In his like last ride, you know, that had like the blue and white combo. So he'll run a special livery at St. Pete, race two at Detroit, Toronto, Music City GP, and Laguna Seca. Indy 500 car will be released at a later date. That, according to Nathan Brown of the Indy Star.
Hey, I got something to throw at you because you mentioned United Rentals. And what company that has been or is currently affiliated with IndyCar do you automatically think IndyCar when you see it? Is there one?
Firestone.
Okay. Firestone is the one.
Verizon.
Yeah.
Honda.
Any of the non-humongous ones? Because to me...
throw one out.
Mine's United Rentals.
Okay, yeah.
Every
time
I see, whether it be a bulldozer or whatever, or anything with United Rentals on it, I think IndyCar. And that's really, outside of the big ones, really one of the few for me, is when I see United Rentals, I think... Graham Rahal and IndyCar, and that's exactly what they want you to think, and it works, at least for me. So I'd be fascinated to know anybody out there, any sponsor on a car or in the series that you see, you automatically think IndyCar.
Napa, I think Rossi every time.
Sure.
DHL.
Yeah.
I would agree though on United Rentals. I think that when I see it, because you see them at construction sites all the time.
All the time. Yeah.
That's a pretty big company.
And I think it's something that I didn't realize how big it was until I saw them in IndyCar.
Same. I didn't really know that that's who they were, but I mean, they're huge.
Absolutely. So yeah, the activation is great for United Rentals. It's worked for at least two people that will never have to rent a bulldozer.
Hopefully not. Sounds like I'd be up to something pretty illegal
something
if I had to do
something's
that.
Something's going on. You're helping get IMS ready for Formula One, apparently. You're tearing something down.
This from Robin Miller's mailbag on racer.com, and I want to get to this before we wrap up because I thought it was interesting. Michael Montre, the IndyCar VP of Promoter and Media Partner Relations, basically the new Steven Starks, I would assume.
Uh-huh.
Sent an email into the mailbag addressing Canada and TV, saying that we broadcast our sport in over 120 countries across the globe, and we are continually looking for ways to improve our product and distribution. Canada is a very important market for IndyCar, home to avid fans, competitive Canadian IndyCar drivers, and a world-class event in Toronto. Our broadcast partner in Canada, Sportsnet, is still determining their broadcast schedule for 2021. It will carry up to 10 races on their more widely distributed channels, including Sports One and Sports World. In addition, they will carry all practices, qualifying, and races live on their Sports Now Plus streaming platform. So, again, you can't have Peacock in Canada, and I get that that is frustrating, but that is an NBC move, not an IndyCar move, but pretty similar to what they had last year. And I know it was a mess. Was that 2 years ago when they switched the international distribution rights?
Yeah, I think it was 2 or 3 years.
I think it was ahead of the 2019 season.
Okay, yeah.
But chaos. This is similar to what they had last year, and I understand that Canadian fans are kind of behind the eight ball, to put it nicely, on this, but at least there's some consistency, and I don't know if Rogers is better than... It's Rogers Sportsnet, right? And then what's the other one? Is it Bell? No.
I'm not
TSN?
Sure. TSN?
I think. So that's the update for Canadian fans on a TV partner.
Well, and our Canadian listeners, let us know, poke holes in this, because they spin it to make it sound really good, but tell us what you're missing out on other than the stream with this. I don't know. I mean, you know, it sounds pretty good when you read it, but poke holes in this for us. What are you guys missing out on?
All right, so unfortunate news that we learned this week. Bob Jenkins will reduce his role at IMS and with the Indy 500 being the PA announcer as he begins his battle with brain cancer. So we send best wishes to Bob, who is a legend in the sport, a wonderful broadcaster, and from everything I've heard, a wonderful, wonderful person to be around. You know, I think of him as the voice of the 500 on the radio network. For many, many years.
Absolutely.
So he succeeded Paul Page for that, and then was on TV and, you know, did the races on ABC and then later on NBCSN. But best wishes to Paul in all of this.
And he lost his wife to cancer, right?
Yeah, to brain cancer.
Wow.
So just terrible.
Dang. So, yeah, you know, thinking of Paul as he fights that and watching some of those older races, you know, he was the mainstay in directing that booth and introing the races. So did a great job back in the day. And
Thursday Night Thunder, right?
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
Yeah, Thursday Night Thunder and doing the IndyCar races and all that stuff. It does a great job. Hopefully we see him back at the track healthy soon.
And then some good news here from Oil Pressure Blog. This is George Phillips. 1 year ago today, this is from a few days ago, but Mrs. Oil Pressure and I left on a cruise. We had no idea what was just ahead for 2020 with Susan's pancreatic cancer diagnosis. Fortunately, she appears to have beaten the odds after a successful surgery at the University of Louisville, and they left to go home several days ago. So that is excellent news there. And
see, there is some positivity in 2021.
Yeah. And we get to Tweets of the Week, and it's pretty simple. Jimmy Johnson tweeting a picture of a machine. Did you see this?
Yeah, Justin? The erg.
I really don't like you. And it's a picture of the ski erg.
Yeah.
And if you've been to PitFit or know, it's one of those, if you know, you know. And that thing is brutal.
Yeah, that thing was when we were put through our paces at PitFit. That was, you know, you did the mind-body stuff. So you had mind stations, but you'd come off the erg. And first of all, a minute on the erg is
if you're doing it correctly, it is insane. If you're doing it the way I did it, where you just you kept going, but you're not like going as fast as possible,
yeah,
which is
right?
what you're supposed
yeah,
to do.
You're actually,
you're still exhausted,
and you're a skier too. So
didn't matter.
Well, you don't use your poles that much.
I mean,
when you're downhill skiing, you know, cross country maybe.
Yeah,
but yeah, that thing is brutal. Luckily, we don't have one of those at our current facility at work. I think at our new facility, we'll have several. I'm not looking for that thing being in any type of cardio training because that thing is death. It's absolute death. Totally agree with you, Jimmy Johnson.
Anything that we missed?
Well, I don't think so. I'm curious. How much of Daytona did you watch?
I watched...
all of it, right? Because you...
not all of it, but probably most of it. Probably like... two-thirds to three-quarters, somewhere in between there. I watched, not the very beginning, but I turned it on, five or so, and then I saw that crash. Like I turned it on like right before that crash, and then they had the rain delay, then obviously I turned it off, and then came back and watched it, about 9:30-ish on through the very end.
I did enjoy Clint Bowyer in the booth.
I did too.
With Jeff Gordon. I would love to see Clint Bowyer... doing IndyCar races. No, it's not going to happen. But he just brings that knowledge with a degree of goofiness that...
an energy.
An energy, for sure. That, you know, it's he's goofy, but it's not like eye roll goofy. It's, you know, he's Clint Bowyer. I mean, he was just like that in interviews as a race car driver. I mean, it's just he was just kind of always smiling on his face, kind of aloof a little bit. I loved him in the booth. He's by the Fox broadcast crew, I think, is by far better than NBC, in my opinion, on the Cup side, not the IndyCar side. Maybe he's a couple in the IndyCar side. But anyway, Cup only. I really like the Fox group and tuning in for the Daytona Road Course coming up on Sunday. I didn't realize they were doing back-to-back weeks at Daytona 500 and now the Road Course.
Yeah, and that should be entertaining. Just because
maybe.
It's a road course race.
Hopefully. And I do, you know, they're hyping up how different this year is going to be in terms of tracks. They're hyping up Bristol and dirt. They're hyping up Austin, which they list as Austin, which is COTA. It's a little different. It's kind of, you know, they're making sure that letting people know that it's not the same old NASCAR Cup. Now, of course, we're going to have our snoozers at the mile and a half, but at least they're bringing some sort of diversity to maybe once a month, you're kind of piqued your interest, like, hey, they're going here for the first time or different. So I'll be tuning in. At least, you know, I told you, Caleb, last week, this is kind of about the time where, okay, I'm ready for auto racing. Football's over. Super Bowl's over. I'm not big into NBA, NHL here and there. The Blackhawks are any good. But this is really when I start gearing up for auto racing, and it just so happens that the Daytona is first. And that's what got me excited. And pretty soon we'll be getting excited for Formula One and then finally IndyCar.
Yeah, it just seems so far away for the IndyCar season opener.
Well, when you push it back, we're
2 months away, basically.
I mean, but in a normal year, we're less than a month away, right? We're really getting excited.
We'd be like 3 weeks away.
Yeah, so we'd be super excited. But unfortunately, pushing back, you know, things a month, which hopefully that leads to more butts in the seats and more paying customers. So it's a worthy thing that we're waiting, but man, it's so close yet so far.
I would agree. Well, hopefully next week we'll have more news. Hopefully some more announcements. I'm surprised there are some things that
come on, IndyCar.
We're still sitting on. Carlin, Dale Coyne Racing with Rick Ware Racing 51, 52. We're waiting on all those. You know, any updates as far as tickets going on sale for the early races? I don't think that's really happened yet.
No, but I think we're getting close to a preliminary plan announced publicly for the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, I would think so too, and I think we'll know something, what, mid-March?
At the latest, I feel. I mean, how late do they want to wait to put tickets on sale?
Well, I mean, that's more for, they already have a lot of people who just shifted their tickets to 2021 from last
True.
Year.
Yeah, but you got to let like, people
tickets
know.
Tickets for St. Pete apparently aren't even on sale yet.
Yeah, that's not good.
And I'm not sure on Barber.
Yeah, so I'm sure there's plenty of news coming for sure.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us on this week's episode of New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.